Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to Reading Heathens, the unholy and wholly uninformed Bible study podcast. I'm your host, Adam B., here with your other host, Daniel T. How you doing, Daniel?
Doing good, man. Just feeling in a Sunday. Do you know what? I'm going to do a quick PSA for our listeners, as I like to do from time to time, because I'm a doctor. I also just want to throw some information that's really going to help them. Hangover symptoms are very similar to coronavirus symptoms if you're afraid of having coronavirus. So I'm sure there's a lot of people out there drinking a little too much, you know, because they're staying at home and they can. I just want to know you don't have coronavirus. You drank too much. You drank more than you thought. You're pouring doubles.
I think the best thing everyone can do is pretend they have that coronavirus. And you know what? This is a Bible. This is a goddamn Bible podcast. If you're out there with a hangover, you know what you deserve? You deserve coronavirus.
Yeah, because you're out there dealing with the devil. You're over there double devil dealing. Also, you know what else I think? Something that I've realized, because I haven't been to a bar in 3 weeks, and I'm a person, I love going to a bar, and I'll try a cocktail tasting menu. I'll try a new beer, a new fancy beer they put in different shaped glasses, so you think it's fancy. I think I'm starting to realize I was just being hoodwinked by the whole situation. I think all those beers suck. And just regular old Budweiser was better the whole time, because that's what I've been having. Because I went and got one of those craft beers after having only Budweiser, and I was like, you know what? They've been tricking us. Those IPAs suck. All the sours suck. Like, all those beers are not fun. Just, we should have just been drinking Budweiser the whole time.
I will agree that quarantine Budweiser hits different, but I don't love going to bars, but I do like drinking different beers. So I can't be right there holding hands with you, Daniel, but I see what you're saying. However, it's far less interesting than most things our guest has to say. Our guest is Alex H. Back on the pod.
Welcome back. A biblical hello to you once again.
And with your spirit.
And also with your spirit with you. Daniel T., I was saying that it's funny that you say a double devil dealing is actually the name of my buddy's new album.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Double devil dealing.
Right. You gotta capitalize on that alliteration.
It's funny to have double in your title of a triple D title.
Yes, yeah. That is the primary theme of the album, you know, things being triple and double.
Man, that's
different combinations, a very specific concept album.
Is that what they mean by math rock?
Yeah, it's got like bizarre time signatures. It's like in 3-2, sometimes it's in 2-3, lots of twos and threes going on.
Oh, hell yeah. Someone's going to get mad at me for not knowing the right name for that brand of metal. Yeah.
I mean,
math rock, that's right.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't really heard it I guess progressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Rock, progressive metal, perhaps.
Hey, it's all rock and roll to me.
Give me the Beat Boys and free my soul.
I always thought it was Give Me the Beach Boys when I was a kid, and I was like, why is this guy doing an advertisement for another band? Like, and also just
Give
like
the Beach Boys.
The idea of a man just yearning for the Beach Boys to free his soul.
And free my soul. I want to get lost in that rock and roll.
Alex, we usually ask people about their history with the Bible, and since we're already talking music, maybe you could fill us in on your childhood with the Lord.
Yes, well, I grew up, as many people did, United Methodist.
Huzzah!
And we were Sunday goers, and religion played quite a role in my life thus far, in that shortly before I was born, my dad got religion and really got it hard and really delved deep into this whole I'm more Christian than everyone else deal that folks kind of this pit that people fall into. So, you know, my mom compromised, and I think the compromise was Methodist. Like, we'll go to Methodist and, you know, we'll do the church thing.
Methodist isn't exactly the first choice of the I'm more Christian than you folks.
Right. Because a schism developed eventually, because I remember growing up going to the Methodist church, which was, you know, all in all a pleasant experience for a while. We kind of joked, I went there every day except Saturday because I went to their after school program. And so that was Monday through Friday. And then we'd go there for church on Sundays. And then, you know, it was a cool place to be. It was just one of those pretty laid back kind of communities. And that's what my mom liked about it, was the community aspect. But after a while, my dad left our household and he delved into the wild and wacky and not so wonderful world of non-denominational born again Christianity. And he for several years went to a inner city borderline cult like church organization that was pretty hardcore, and I went there as well for many years. And so I kind of got two different flavors of the Christian world. I got kind of the more laid back, not quite mega churchy, but like, you know, just kind of easy mode Christianity of like the Methodist community. Yeah. And then I also got the like hardcore, like 3 hour long services, whooping and hollering, church. That was pretty big into like, we are more holy than everyone else.
Yeah.
So that was quite the experience. And I in the last decade have radically restructured my belief system. And that was part of why I wanted to be on the podcast when I heard about it, was that the Bible, I used to, and I also went to a Christian high school, a private Christian high school, which was a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah.
And this, so I had kind of a triad of communities I experienced. But at one time I fancied myself quite a biblical scholar. I did some studying. I considered myself knowledgeable. And relatively recently in my life, I've essentially just done away with it. It's faded away. And so when I heard that, you're just reading the Bible from just kind of like almost like an outsider perspective, like a non-believer's perspective, I thought, oh, yeah, that'd be interesting to kind of re-examine these things, revisiting and seeing it from a literary perspective. Point of view is of interest to me.
That's quite the history, man. When you were in the non-denominational church, was that like, yes, really appealing to you? Because I imagine that the like being part of that community would have appealed to me, but I wouldn't have, even at my most devoted 3 hour services, I would be like, God, I want to play Pokemon so bad.
Right. The answer is yes and no. Yes, in that this was a time when like I was hanging out with my dad and we were going through a divorce and I was kind of like on his side. And so he was working real hard to like, you know, make me feel like part of the group and like having fun. So I kind of associate those experiences with hanging out and like having fun with my dad. So yeah, those kind of wires are crossed in my brain. And an additional layer of weirdness that has only been elucidated to me recently is that this was a black church, and we are not black. We are white, very white. And this was just, and it, on top of that, a big part of their doctrine was like denying race. They really emphasized the, we are new creations in the new man, and we are a new kind of born again race that's not attached to the world. And I really bought into that philosophy, and I liked that philosophy. And I truly felt like I'm part of this group. Like, oh, I'm not white. You know, I'm not who I am. I am this spiritual being.
Yeah.
And that whole element of things has been, I'm still processing that, which was, you know, so as far as being part of the group, that's just an additional layer of complication of like, was I part of the group? Kind of. You know, like, yeah. I would endure the 3-4 hour long, you know, sessions, and I did enjoy the enthusiasm and the leader of this place. You know, I say it was borderline cult like. One of the ways it resembled a cult is that their leader was a person of genuine charisma, and you know, the closest I've ever come to being truly like entranced by a person
and yeah.
feeling like, wow, like this person really is closer to God. Like they have the answers and I don't. So, but ultimately in the end, there was a period in my life, a couple of years where I just slowly stopped going, and they could have reached, like, if I was really part of their community, they could have reached out.
Yeah. Yeah.
They could have pulled me back relatively easily. All they had to do was get on my case about it, even a little bit. And I think that would have been sufficient to bring me back, but they didn't. And yeah. I think that's evidence in the column for, I wasn't really part of their group. They didn't really care.
That's interesting. I feel kind of similar in that when I started to drift away from the church, I could have very easily been pulled back into it, except my anxiety and depression started to lessen the further I got away from my being religiously pious. Yeah. And so I was kind of waiting for a little bit of like guilt to pull me back in, and it didn't.
Well, I wonder, you know, because I've had this thought about, I don't know, kind of maybe like maybe more born again situations, because I always noticed a difference in families who had kind of generations of church going in them, that it seemed like a bigger deal whenever they stopped. And, you know, to me, it seemed like a lot of my born-again world, people came and went all the time. You know, someone gets off drugs and now they're all of a sudden born again into this church, but then they get on drugs again and they're gone. It just seemed more normal for people to come and go than, like, if you're generations into Catholicism, it's like you just go because that's what your family does. And also, right. It seems like the families are more, like, together, I guess. So, like, you know, in our family, it wasn't crazy for like a cousin to go to jail or get wild, and we just wouldn't see him for a while.
Yeah,
you know, and in kind of like waspy Catholic style families, there wasn't that many in the, you know, podunk place I grew up in. But my image of them, anyways, was that, you know, it's a bigger deal to be leaving. It's less loosey goosey, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think my generation in particular is kind of, in regards to both sides of my family, I think we're kind of right on the edge of that tradition, because my dad's side of the family, they're all, like all the aunts and uncles, they're all still pretty devout for the most part. And on my mom's side, same kind of deal. They're not quite devout, but they're right on the edge of that like tradition of like, well, we're this, and we go to this church. And I think my whole generation, like all my you know, siblings and cousins, we're all of the mind of like, like we just don't really see much value in the tradition much anymore, even from a family perspective. So I think we're kind of right at that point where it's dissolving and breaking down.
Just thinking about all that, I think a lot of people, you know, in different or just in different backgrounds really have no idea how powerful a church like what you were describing can be. I mean, we're seeing it right now with people that are refusing to not go to church during the pandemic. And it's like, yeah, of course they're not. Like, this really, like, Christianity isn't a casual thing to a lot of these churches. It is everything. It is your whole life. And I only grew up Methodist. So I didn't have like a huge presence of that in the church, but I was living my life as if like the word of God was the most important thing, period, the end. And I think there's just like a disconnect of like, yeah, no, you guys don't understand. There's whole traditions that are unique to specific churches.
Yeah. And this reminds me of, a while back, a couple months ago, I was having one of those lovely kind of late night deep conversations with some friends, and you know, religion is not often a topic that is broached in good company, but this was one of those opportunities, this one of those occasions where it was broached, and we had this lovely talk about like basically what we're talking about now, like, whoa, did you grow up religious, did you not? And I had basically a group of really old friends that really went way back, like we basically all grew up together, and we were with we were at someone's house who, like, they were good friends, but I didn't grow up with them. And so when we talked about like, oh well, did you go to church, and like everyone who all grew up, we were like, oh yeah, of course, like we all did, and that's what was expected and that's what was normal. And then my buddy who didn't grow up with us was just absolutely floored by how normal we thought religion was, because to him, I mean, he kind of had some religious wackiness going on in his life, but to him it wasn't like normal, not where he grew up, and it was an artifact of like the region he grew up in. Whereas with us, it was just this attitude of like, oh well, it's a given, you go to church, it's just which church do you go to? It wasn't a question of if you went or not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely how it was in my community as well. I remember, never mind, I brought that up before. Well, I really do. I want to keep talking about this.
Yeah. Good, but, good talk. We got a chapter to get to, though.
Yeah, this is way too. This is way too like interesting and intellectual for this podcast.
This content is too good.
It's right now. Not appropriate.
We got to move on to these arbitrary laws.
Listen, the people have to hear it. This is Exodus 21. I'm reading out of the.
Let's laugh at those ancient dumbasses.
Damn it. I'm trying to find the NIV right now. I don't want to.
Or current dumbasses, if you are Orthodox Jew. I'm just going to go ahead and put them on blast.
our Jewish producer is going to cut that out. or maybe she's just going to turn up the volume on it. All right.
Spread it around out of context.
God,
that's what you got to do.
God damn it. I cannot find the NIV. Oh, here it is. Finally. Exodus 21. And the title is Hebrew Servants. Great. These are the laws you are to set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he is to serve you for 6 years, but in the seventh year he shall go free without paying anything. If he comes alone, he is to go free alone, but if he has a wife when he comes, she is to go with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the woman and her children shall belong to her master, and only the man shall go free. Damn. But if the servant declares, I love my master and my wife and children and do not want to go free, then his master must take him before the judges. He shall take him to the door of the doorpost and pierce his ear with an awl. Then he will be his servant for life. Wow. Ooh. Okay, that's why I wasn't allowed to have that earring.
You can't get out, but you can go deeper if you want.
Imagine that. If you really love your wife and children, you can go get your ear pierced and be a slave forever. If a man sells his...
I do like that they add if he loves his master, you know, and his wife and his children.
If he only loves his wife and children, well, he's fucked.
Yeah.
This is verse 7. If a man sells his daughter as a servant, she is not to go free as male servants do. If she does not please the master who has selected her for himself, he must let her be redeemed. He has no right to sell her to foreigners because he has broken faith with her. If he selects her for his son, he must grant her the rights of a daughter. If he marries another woman, he must not deprive the first one of her food, clothing, and marital rights. If he does not provide her with these three things, she is to go free without any payment of money. I'm a little confused there about the marriage.
Seems like a complex situation there.
Yeah. If he marries another woman, I guess this is polygamy is still a thing. But Paulette is nodding her head yes, that
if the son, if he gives the person to the son, but the son's like, I'm going to get another one too, then you don't get to just turn her back into a slave.
Okay. Like,
that's kind of what I kind of sorted out.
When does monogamy become a thing?
I don't know. I guess
I feel like that's a New Testament thing.
Is there just like a point where it's just like, okay, no more of that?
I wonder if that's a, I don't know.
Strikes me as one of those things that people always say is biblical, but it's actually not in there.
Yeah, it's never covered.
Yeah.
I've got a heading here that says personal injuries, so this should be fun. Anyone who strikes a person with a fatal blow, this is verse 12, is to be put to death. However, if it is not done intentionally, but God lets it happen, they are to flee to a place I will designate. But if anyone schemes and kills someone deliberately, that person is to be taken from my altar and put to death.
And before the fatal blow is given, one must say, world star.
World star! And the place they designate is the depths of YouTube. Flee to a place that I will designate. I guess that's, you know, just a prison colony. That's an interesting, the manslaughter colony would be a weird place to live.
Yeah.
Well, God let it happen.
A bunch of people who don't mean to kill anyone, but they accidentally killed someone.
God let it happen.
Yeah.
Verse 15, anyone who...
Was that really in the text?
Yeah.
And God lets it happen?
Yeah.
I thought you added that.
No.
For comedic effect.
No, however, if it is not done intentionally, but God lets it happen, they are to flee to a place I will designate. Sorry, this is verse 15. Anyone who attacks their father or mother is to be put to death.
Mm.
Anyone who kidnaps someone is to be put to death, whether the victim has been sold or is still in the kidnapper's possession. Anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death.
Damn.
Shit.
I mean, we just told you, we gotta honor thy father and mother. We're adding some specifics to that.
If people quarrel and one person hits another with a stone or with their fist and the victim does not die but is confined to bed, the one who struck the blow will not be held liable if the other can get up and walk around outside with the staff. However,
okay, all right,
the guilty
you're okay. You can walk around with a staff. You're okay. I didn't even hit you.
However, the guilty party must pay the injured person for any loss of time and see that the victim is completely healed. This is some real deal, like insurance law, or like
some code of Hammurabi code sort of stuff going on.
There's a billboard in the desert of a dude who's just like, do you have to use a staff? call call personal attorney blah 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 now.
Ancient injury lawyer.
Verse 20.
Do you know your Exodus 21 rights?
Verse 20. Anyone who beats their male or female slave with a rod must be punished if the slave dies as a direct result. But they are not to be punished if the slave recovers after a day or two, since the slave is their property.
Is this the origin of the phrase, to be beaten within an inch of your life? Is this the within an inch rule? Is this the origin?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the King James Version would be more specifically tied to that.
Just don't beat them to death.
Just, yeah. If they're hurt for a day or two, you know, they're yours, so great. That's what's really upsetting is that this absolutely was used to justify a terrible treatment of people for thousands of years.
Oh, yeah, for years.
It's really,
years and years.
Really hard to read that. 22, this is going to be great, too. If people are fighting and hit a pregnant woman and she gives birth prematurely, but there is no serious injury, the offender must be fined whatever the woman's husband demands and the court allows. But if there is serious injury, you are to take life for life, an eye for an eye, just eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. And that is bruise, by the way. It's not brews.
Bruise for bruise. This is also known as the Saw 4 rule. It's the plot of Saw 4. His wife gives birth prematurely when she gets smacked in the tummy.
Just the baby just pops right out.
Bleep.
I don't recall reading the extended version of Eye for Eye. I like that.
Right, that sounds like too many. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, after a while, it's like, we get it. Does it only like pertain to pregnant women, the eye for eye, burn for burn situation? It's just a special addendum for pregnant women.
Yeah, was this an extension of like if you're fighting, or is this just like in general?
I think this is extended out to just in general at this point. I think it's explaining how the court works. Like, if there's serious injury, you deal with it like this, you know?
This is our... And this you know, this concept of justice, this concept of fairness, it's been around for millennia. Just this idea of the, you know, if you injure someone and we catch you, you know, we're going to do the same thing to you.
Yeah.
Which I guess was meant to be a deterrent. You know, like if you knock someone's eye out, you're like, oh, shit, I'll get my eye knocked out.
Yeah, and it helps not make it about money when it doesn't have to be, I guess.
Suppose so.
Just simpler to get it done that way. I've only experienced this type of law with my sister, where it was like, oh, you can hit me back.
Oh, right, or the ancient sibling law of I'll split it and you choose.
That's it. That
is that in the Bible
somewhere? It should be in the Bible.
If I split your hand in half, you split my hand in half, and then I choose.
This is verse 26. An owner who hits a male or female slave in the eye and destroys it must let the slave go free to compensate for the eye. And an owner who knocks out the tooth of a male or female slave must let the slave go free to compensate for the tooth. Oh my gosh, I'd be over there trying to get a tooth knocked out.
Right. Is there some like ancient insurance scam, you know, freedom scam of like, that sounds like a play you could write. You could be like, hey, I heard... you get your eye knocked out, you go free. It's them like constantly. It's a bit of a gamble though, because they can beat you, just not to death.
But they
can't knock out an eye or a tooth though.
I'm just saying that a tooth seems so much less than an eye. That's some serious like Dobby's clothes situation. It's so funny that
that doesn't seem equivalent.
Teeth were so important. Maybe it's because by the time you were like 30, you only had a few left.
Yeah,
they were
probably not a lot of dental hygiene.
So I think maybe the movie is because if I understand the rule correctly, they can beat you, but if you're able to heal, if you're deemed able that you healed, you just go back to work. It's fine because they own you. So the movie is a guy with a bunch of scars and injuries on him, but the court keeps deeming that he healed, so he has to keep going back to be a slave, and he just starts fights constantly, and he's just this
he's just
marred
too
up
hardcore.
Person. Yeah,
he's just strong as hell. It's his curse. Yeah, this is all just awful to even postulate about. This is so fucking grim. This is verse 28. If a bull gores a man or a woman to death, the bull is to be stoned to death, and its meat must not be eaten. But the owner of the bull will not be held responsible. If, however, the bull has had the habit of goring, and the owner has been warned but has not kept it pinned up, and it kills a man or a woman, the bull is to be stoned, and its owner is also to be put to death. However, if payment is demanded, the owner may redeem his life by the payment of whatever is demanded. This law also applies if the bull gores a son or a daughter. If the bull gores a male or female slave, the owner must pay 30 shekels of silver to the master of the slave, and the bull is to be stoned to death. That is the longest law so far.
a lot of sub laws going on. Apparently, subsections.
This was like either, you know, the person who wrote this like had some experience with bull goring.
Right.
Or it was just a dangerous ass time.
I presume this is Moses.
I mean, that's what we're to believe.
Who must be adding on. These are just all addenda to the laws. We're just doling out the laws now.
It's what do you call it when you stick something onto a bill? Like you can have my
pork.
Vote as long as this. What? I'm not thinking of amendment.
Pork?
Whatever.
You know, this is. I think back to my my Bible school days. And the presence of these sorts of chapters in the Bible always kind of struck me as interesting, because I think it muddies the waters as to what the books of the Bible are meant to do, like what their purpose is. Because on one hand, you have these mythical sections that are definitely kind of more entertaining, like we just came from the plagues, are definitely more like historical, I suppose, like pseudo-historical, like we're telling the story, the saga of what happened, and we're maybe embellishing it and making it big and grand. But then you also have this kind of banal record-keeping.
Yeah.
Like, let's just write a bunch of chapters that are just like, if an ox does this, and you gotta pay 30 shekels, you know. It's like, suddenly it's not a saga anymore. It's like half saga, half bookkeeping. Which just makes it a unique document, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things that inspired us to do the podcast, is also just like, this is, whether, you know, there's truth in the myth or not, this is like a weird historical document that's been around for thousands of years that people almost never reference as anything but a religious myth. It's like, all this stuff is really interesting. This was written as law. I'm still trying to figure out what you call it when you add something to legislation. Earmark.
It's an earmark.
There you go.
Yeah.
Earmark.
So these are Moses' earmarks.
To God. So I'll do your commandments, but you got to let me to talk about some goring after. This is verse 33, and I'm just going to finish out the chapter right here because we got a long, juicy one. If anyone uncovers a pit or digs one and fails to cover it, and an ox or donkey falls into it, the one who opened the pit must pay the owner for the loss and take the dead animal in exchange. If anyone's bull injures someone else's bull and it dies, the two parties are to sell the live one and divide both the money and the dead animal equally. However, if it was known that the bull had the habit of goring, yet the owner did not keep it penned up, the owner must pay animal for animal and take the dead animal in exchange. The end.
Mm-hmm. Those shepherd people. Got a lot of shepherd rules.
I like that bulls have different personalities.
Yeah, he had the habit of goring. That bull's got the habit of goring.
Well, guys,
but also, how do you have the habit of goring? If you get killed for goring, how can you have it be a habit? Because if he gets killed the first time, he gores somebody.
I mean, this law is just now coming out, though, so you know, there's some bulls that already have their habits built in. Rating this on 1 to 5 stars, guys. I'm just going to come out hard against all these rules about how far you can beat your slaves and all that. This is a gross chapter to read. I'm giving it 0.25 stars because I like the bulls. I like that there are a lot of angry bulls.
That might be the lowest score in the history of heathens.
So all the folks running the wiki will have to take note of this particular rating. This is a tough one to rate for me because on one hand, I actually, for the reasons I stated before, I find these chapters kind of interesting. Yeah. I imagine they'll get less interesting once you've read like 10 in a row.
Oh, goody, Daniel.
I'll give it a star for innate interest. So I suppose I'll settle on 2 stars. Overall, it's a rather boring just listing of laws chapter. The laws are kind of funny and interesting, if ethically dubious and awful. So I'm going to give Exodus 21 2 stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a rough one. Yeah, you know what? I agree. And these laws are weird. I was all up on my Moses stuff. I got more questions on what that man's doing. I'd rather just get back to him. I'm confused about the Ten Commandments still, and I kind of want to get into that story, and this is getting in the way of that. And, this has sad history in multiple different parts of time. Because not only was it, back then did they have slaves, but even, 200 years ago, it was probably still used. Even in the 60s, they used these lines. So, yeah, this is a pretty sad little section. So I'm just going to give it 1 star. 1 star seems good. The writer of this obviously had a legal issue with a unruly bull. So,
right. They had to add. Maybe they're just mad at their neighbor. Maybe their neighbor is like, you know that bull has a habit of goring. You it's need on, to yeah. put him in its own pen.
And also, I like to dig a lot of pits, okay? There's no water
if people
around.
Are falling in, you know, that's their, well, you know, we'll have to figure that out. But, you know, that's what I'm here for.
Well, I may not have enjoyed the chapter, but I definitely enjoyed today's episode. Alex, thank you so much for being on the pod. Before we get to plugs, I want to mention, I think we're gonna put a little of your music in as an outro.
Right, that was another interesting tidbit that we didn't really discuss, was that I went through a phase. I made 2 gospel rap albums in my day.
I really wish they survived in full form.
Yes, well, I was looking for them the other day, and I was like, oh, that'd be perfect, because their lyrics are so, like, cringy, and, like, so, it'd be truly listening to, like, a different person than I am now.
Yeah.
But I apparently deleted them at one time, and in a great purge of some sort. but I do have some. I do have most of the instrumentals that went behind the beats, and I sent some of those over to you. I went under the name The Indomitable B.I.G.
That is
the young version fantastic. Of me, completely unknowingly picking that name. I had no idea who the infamous B.I.G. was. I just kind of unconsciously picked that name, so that's kind
of
dope.
Yeah, man, I think you were just tied into some of that same juice that he was. Would be
yeah. I mean, when you think about it, we're pretty much the same person. We led very similar lives, and I just wanted to give tribute to that fact.
What is there a specific track you would prefer us to put on the outro?
I always felt one of my best ones was Here Comes the Sound.
Hell yeah.
I was kind of proud of that one. And it's the one of the few ones that has an actual audio recording of little baby me on it.
That's fantastic. Nice. I'll make sure that part is included. And also, has you got anything you'd like to plug?
Absolutely. I mentioned earlier, I was kind of jokingly saying my buddy released an album, but I would like to plug his actual new band, my buddy Trey.
Oh, Trey!
You might, if you are a praying type or a positive vibes type, he currently lives in Shanghai, so send him those prayers and vibes. But his band, you'll find him on Bandcamp under the name Hydra Slug.
Nice.
H-Y-D-R-A Slug. They've only got one track up on there, but they've been doing pretty well over in Shanghai. And he says they're going to release a full album soon. So I'm really stoked for him.
That's awesome. I will check that out. Trey and I are our birthday pals. We share a same birthday. So though we never got to be super close just because we didn't hang out a lot, I did once share a birthday brew dog with Trey.
Oh boy. How delightful.
How lovely.
Now you can share a digital brew dog in audio form.
And also, yeah. I'm going to put in the description a link to your scoundrel-esque music.
Yes, so SoundCloud, if you like. I kind of was inspired by Adult Swim's off-the-air videos. I make these hour-long themed audio mixes just for fun on SoundCloud.
Heck yeah. Hell well, yeah, man. You can always find us... Hosted Pod on Instagram, twitch.tv/hostedpod, where we got a bunch of cool things like Schaefer cooking it up on the kitchen on Friday nights, and Daniel printing up a 3D mess. a hot 3D mess. Daniel, I didn't mean that to sound derogatory. Daniel's got a good show too. It's usually on Mondays. And we'll catch you next time on Reading Heathens. Bye-bye.
And also with you.
And also with your spirit as well, too.
This, my friends, is the portion of a song that I like to call The Buffer. A short, catchy tune meant to trigger recognition, so said recognizee can turn up the juice. Now here comes the sound. Now here comes this. 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 Now here comes this.